Daniel Jones, Daniel Jones, Daniel Jones, the whole Giants Nation from the Empire State is excited about Daniel Jones. Let's get the damn show started.
Listen, when Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike grab mics, it's real sports, real talk, on the field or on the court. If it happened in New York, it's covered like a blanket, dog. Interviews are ill, simply up close and personal. That erupt, Lloyd's batting first, set the tone. Mike's either at the stadium or the garden on the phone. Here we go, Giants and Jets, Yankees and Mets, Knicks and Nets. This is only an intro, the show is next.
A-O-B! And please pardon my fresh as we bring you all new episodes of Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Listeners, today is Monday, September 23rd, 2019. And yes, this show airs every Monday from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, CastBox, TuneIn, Google Play, Pocket Cast. Be sure to hit that subscribe button so you can become a member of the growing family. You can also catch previous areas of the show that you may have missed. Me and Mad Mike are also on social media, Lloyd A. Thompson, one word, Instagram, Lloyd A. Thompson, one word, Twitter, LLOYD. Be sure to hit that follow button. And if you got any questions that you'd like for me and Mad Mike to answer on this show, you can shoot them through email to lloyd@partmyfresh.com, or you can send them directly to the website. Listeners, another great show for you today. We're going to talk about the continuing Antonio Brown saga as he was released from the New England Patriots just a few weeks after being signed by the New England Patriots. We're going to talk some baseball as the Yankees prepare themselves for a playoff push to win their 28th World Series title. And we're going to talk about the New York Mets. Do they have a chance of sneaking in and getting a wild card spot? And we're going to talk some New York Giants football and some New York Jets football as the Giants pulled out a comeback win against the Bucks and the Jets pulled out a stinker against the New England Patriots. So as always, listeners, let's buckle up, sit back and relax, and start spreading the news. Hey, yo, let's get it.
How sweet it is. It's Monday. That means the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Show is back. Let's go.
As always, we got to find out where the Mad Mike is and where he's calling from. Yo, Mad Mike, where you at today, baby?
Lloyd, I'm on the East Coast. I'm in New York. I'm home. I finished celebrating this weekend with our good friend Joe Rivera. He finally tied the knot, and we was out celebrating.
Our good friend. All right, congratulations. But let's start off by talking about how your New York Jets look lost in an embarrassing New England Patriots. You know, they just beat the snot out of the Jets. And at least the Jets can't lose next week because they got a bye next week. They fell at 0-3 on Sunday. They lost to the Patriots. What was the score? 30-13?
30-14.
Yep. And now they get a bye week to try to get
one. There was actually one bright spot. They finally have a kicker who can make an extra point.
There you go. But no team has ever needed a bye as bad as your New York Jets. But they just simply didn't look like they belong on the same field as the Patriots for much of the game on Sunday, man, Mike. And the final score was deceiving, you know, and it fails to indicate how lopsided the game actually was. And Tom Brady had open receivers, though the Jets offense barely crossed the midfield, and the game was never in doubt. And the Jets are 0-3 for the first time since 2003, and in a desperate need of getting some players back, third stringer Luke Falk made his first start at quarterback. Sam Darnold obviously is suffering from mono, and Trevor Siemian is done for the rest of the season with an ankle injury, Matt Mike. And obviously, he looked overmatched against a strong Patriots defense. And this Patriots defense has not allowed a touchdown this season. But it was not all his fault, Mad Mike, okay? The offensive line had another bad day. He was sacked 5 times. He went 12 of 22 for 98 yards and threw one interception. And the Jets were 0 for 12 on third down conversions, Mad Mike. This team averaged 2.2 yards per play and had more punts, 10 punts, than they did first down, 6. And the Patriots outgained the Jets 382 to 105 in total yards. Brady is Brady. He threw for 306 yards and 2 touchdowns. And the Jets avoided a shutout with a special teams touchdown in the third quarter. And it was a, listen, it was the first touchdown for the Jets since the third quarter in week one against the Buffalo Bills, a stretch of 7 quarters. And the offense was scoreless on Sunday, struggled to even get a first down. Coach Adam Gase was extremely conservative in his play calling. We'll fuck with the quarterback. And through 3 games, Mad Mike, the Jets defense has outscored the offense 15 to 11. And special teams is now 4 behind with 7. And as bad as the score was, it looked even worse to be worse. And early in the game, the Patriots scored touchdowns on their first 3 possessions. Greg Williams' defense allowed open wide receivers all over the damn field.
Well. First of all, Dale Roberts allowed open receivers. And when he wasn't getting beat in press man coverage all day, he was given 8 to 10 yard bumpers because he didn't want to get picked on. Look, Dale Roberts, for anybody that knows, Dale Roberts actually came from the New England Patriots organization when we grabbed him. He just finished getting waived. If a defensive genius like Bill Belichick doesn't see any use in the guy, there's no reason that the New York Jets should be picking them up. I don't care what anybody says. As far as the defense went, I think this defense has played as well as it could play when you consider that their secondary is overmatched outside of the safety, and safeties May and Adams. There's only so much those guys can do. I know that Greg Williams is trying to mask the defensive efficiencies in man coverage by playing more zone, but you saw against the Patriots why that's not going to work, because teams are just going to smarten up. And as a matter of fact, you saw it last week, Monday night, on Odell Beckham's touchdown. It's his 75-yard, 89-yard touchdown. They went into a zone, and they just give guys running starts. And these quarterbacks are just going to take the quick 2-second pass, and we're going to get gashed all game. The biggest, man, I don't even know where to go, because I look at it and I say, Mike Maccagnan, he should be happy he was fired when he did, because the media turned on Adam Gase at that point. Because I'll tell you this, if you see how poorly put together this team is right now, there's no way that Mike Maccagnan wouldn't be fired after week 3. There's no depth on this team. I'll give you an example, and I actually pled with you on this show. I begged the New York Jets on this show to sign Shaq Barrett, who ended up going to Tampa Bay on a friendly deal. The Jets still have $9 million in cap space. Still have $9 million in cap space. You don't think they could have used Shaq Barrett, who now has 8 sacks on the season in 3 games?
Yeah, what do you have, like 13 sacks against the Giants yesterday?
I'm just saying, think about that. He has 8 sacks this year. You don't think the New York Jets could have used that kind of outside pass rush? I'll give you another stat, crazy stat that I heard during the game. Leonard Williams, who I've countlessly crushed for having no heart, for just not being able to get to the quarterback, for quitting on plays, he's been double-teamed the 4th most plays in the NFL. Him and Aaron Donald are actually tied for the 4th most double teams in the NFL. He's getting double-teamed as if he has the same production as Aaron Donald, and he has nowhere close to it. But you know what? The Jets don't have outside help. And the Jets actually don't have any help on the other side of the line. Henry Anderson looks like a 1-year flu. And that's the problem I have with Mike Maccagnan. He kept so many holdovers. He just wanted to be right. This team is bad, bro. They're bad. Luke Falk to me he only has a job because Adam Gase liked him coming out of the Mike Leach offense last year. He was in the Miami practice system, so he knows the offense. Luke Falk has no arm, absolutely no arm. That ball does not travel. You saw a couple times where Robbie Anderson got behind the defense, and the ball just never made it to him. He's being forced to come back to throws. I'm tired of seeing it, man. You know what? Adam Gase, I understand what you're looking for, but where's the creativity, man? Where's the creativity? There's nothing. Ty Montgomery, I mean, how many times are we going to see Le'Veon Bell on first down hit the A-gap? Like, come on, man. Or how many times are we going to see 3rd-and-9 draws to him? We had a 3rd-and-3 at one point in the fourth quarter. Third quarter, I want to tell you, before, like, the game, I guess you could say was out of hand, but it was 30-14 in the fourth quarter. And it's 3rd-and-3. And he calls a screen pass 5 yards behind the line of scrimmage. Lev Bell had to go 4 yards to lose a yard on 3rd-and-3. Like, what are you doing? You don't throw the ball backwards. Throw the ball forward. It's unbelievable to me. And the offensive line, I know he's going to say, it's horrible, whatever. I don't care, man. How about you start using some creativity to start helping everybody else? You're supposed to be the offensive guru. You're supposed to be the guy that prevents these kind of things from happening. If we wanted to see this, we would have kept Jeremy Bates in place. That's all I got to say about this, and we can move on.
Look, the Jets get a week off, and then they go to Philly to force face the Eagles, and the Jets have to be hopeful Darnold will be back for that game. And they also need linebacker C.J. Mosley, who has a groin injury. They need him back badly, man, Mike. They need him back badly, but before, let's go, we always hit up the report cards. So let's hit up the report card with the New York Jets. Okay, and we must say that this offense was just atrocious. All right, and Jets coach Adam Gase called the offense performance atrocious, and obviously, you're the play caller. You're calling the play, so what is that saying about yourself?
That's the problem I have. Like, at some point, and this is a problem that he had in the... This is where we're starting to come close to that same Miami locker room. A big part of the problem he had in Miami was those players used to say, pointed the finger at us, and he never pointed at himself. Stop pointing the finger and start pointing... stop pointing the finger and start, pointing the thumb back at yourself. You know what I mean? The offense was atrocious. You're right. And what's he doing to change that? Where's Jamison Crowder been the last 2 weeks? Where's the speed plays to Robbie Anderson? Where was all this trickery? We thought we were going to get these split back sets with number 88 and number 26. We're not getting any of that.
Yeah, Montgomery is not being utilized at all.
Any of it.
And this wasn't all the quarterback's problems. The offensive line stunk. Giving up five sacks, and it just averaged 1.8 yards per rushing attempt. It's going to take more than Sam Darnold to fix that, man, Mike.
I'm going to tell you this, though. I saw it a lot in the Browns game, and I saw it a lot in the Patriots game. There's a lot of miscommunication. There's a lot of guys that are for some reason, misreading the rushers. And I can't tell you how many times I'm seeing these guys. I don't know if it's the zone read, zone blocking that they're confused with, but you know how many times, like for Kelvin Beachum to go and double team a defensive tackle, and give a free lane to Myles Garrett, on numerous occasions last week. There was a play this week where Jamie Collins came in, this past week. Jamie Collins comes rushing right up the gut because Ryan Khalil decides that he's going to go in there and double team a tackle. If the Jets believe that they had some of the best, meanest guards in football with Osemele and Winters. Never been a Winters fan. I think he's overrated. I think he's always hurt. And even when he's not hurt, he's just an average guy just because he makes more than average money. Who cares? But, those guys are making like a combined $18 million a year. You're paying for elite guard play. Your center shouldn't be chipping. He shouldn't be double teaming. He should be looking for that free runner at the quarterback. That's why he's here, to diagnose those blitzes. That's exactly why he's here. And he's missing more than everybody.
Well, I'm going to give the offense an H for horrible.
I'm going to give him an S, but it's not for fail. It's for F out of here.
<clears throat> Oh, man, you got me coughing on that one.
Forgive me,
listeners, I'm feeling a little bit under the weather, but that was a good one. I like that. But let's move on to the defense, Matt Mike. And it wasn't pretty early in the game, but I will say they played better after the first quarter. And the Patriots scored touchdowns on their first three possessions as open receivers, as I said, ran all over the field. And they allowed Tom Brady to get, you know, to throw for 306 yards and two TDs. And he kind of picked them apart. But the secondary, they struggled a bit. Okay, and the defensive line got nowhere near Brady. Leonard Williams had three tackles and no quarterback hits. But they did play better. They did play better down the stretch. So I'm going to give the defense a C+, Mad Mike.
I'm going to be honest. I gave them a D. And I probably should have gave them probably like a C+ as well. I gave them a D because if you take out Darrell Roberts and Tremaine Johnson, this defense wasn't that bad. Neville Hewitt led the team again in tackles. Blake Cashman, his coverage game was pretty damn strong on the running backs. After the first couple drives, he erased Brandon Bolden. That's his name, Bolden, whatever. You didn't see much of the tight end. I know that they don't use him, but you didn't see much of the tight end. And I know it was an overthrow against the backup quarterback, but, you know, you get a pick six on defense from the safeties. It's hard, man. It's like, I don't know what they're going to do. You know, Brian Poole played really well again, another strong game for him, a couple pass defenses. But Tremaine Johnson is bad, and Darrell Roberts, you got to a point where Rich Gannon was like, I kind of feel bad for him. There's nothing he can do.
Now, during the week, man, Mike, Jamal Adams kind of spoke out about Tremaine Johnson being benched. Do you think that's the reason why Tremaine Johnson actually got the start nod in this week's game?
No. He spoke out about himself being benched because he got benched at the end of that game. And I had a real problem with it. I had a problem with Jamal getting benched because, you know, not for nothing, they wanted to bring him in before something bad happened. He injures himself, he gets a penalty, gets a suspension or whatever it is. You know, not for nothing, that game was in hand last week. I think it was 23-3.
Yeah, they were in
Cleveland. But you know, we knew that they were going to lose. It was the fourth quarter. It was late in the fourth quarter. And they're playing their starters. When he knocked out Chubb, When Chubb got up concussed and he was wobbly, I was screaming. I was going nuts. You know why? Because if you're going to play your starters and try to run up the score on us, that's the kind of message you want your team leader to send. We're not quitting on this side of the field either. You want to take that chance? Go for it. And then they pulled him and benched him. And I'm like, you guys are sending the wrong message. Meanwhile, Tremaine Johnson deserved to be benched. Listen, that's when I support them 100%. If the film shows a guy is loafing and a guy is not giving max effort, send a message. Bench his ass. We're talking about a guy who supposedly is late to meetings yet again. A guy who on film is being shown as jogging and giving up on plays. Yeah, nah, man, take your millions and go elsewhere. And I will say this. I used to praise Mac for a lot of his contracts. That might be the worst contract he's ever given because this year he's $12 million cap and next year he's got a $9 million cap hit. Right. He's going nowhere for 2 years.
All right, so now special teams. Arthur Miller got the Jets on the scoreboard when he recovered a muff punt for a touchdown. It was more than the offense did all day. And Lachlan Edwards punted a whopping 10 times, Matt Mike. He averaged almost 47 yards per punt. I'm going to give the special teams a B.
Oh, I gave them an A. You hit both your extra point attempts. It's a damn shame that I'm over here counting extra points as a success. But, you know, as far as I know, this kid, I don't even know his name right now. Drawing a blank. But he's got more extra points, field goal kicks than anybody else. Of the four Jets kickers. Think about that for a second. And, you know, you get a special teams touchdown, whether it's a defensive or it's a return. You got the touchdown. And Lachlan Edwards, man, I mean, listen, his leg's going to be sore tomorrow. Hey, you're almost averaging 50 yards per kick and on 10 kicks. Listen, You're in good shape. I gave them an A. If there was one bright spot, one thing to be proud of, it's the fact that it looks like, Boyle is doing a great job and kind of coaching back to, his guys back to one of the league's better units.
All right, and now moving on to the coaching, and the Jets were undermanned with 8 projected starters out, man, Mike, including Donald and C.J. Mosley. And the quarterback on, the defense, C.J. Mosley is big. So, him being out is big, but still the team played terribly. And any of that, to me, that all reflects on Coach Adam Gase. Again, I thought that he was very conservative on offense and could not find any in-game answers for the Allen Jets. And to me, it all falls on the coach's shoulders at a certain extent, Matt Mike. At some point, it falls on the shoulders. So like you said, be a man and point the finger at yourself instead of putting the blame on somebody else. You know you're short, man. You know what you have. So you do a better job. You're the leader. You're the leader. You do a better job and make the most of what you have. And he didn't do that. And he hasn't done that thus far. And, I hate to call for somebody's job so early, man, Mike, but I've been unimpressed with Adam Gase thus far as a Jets coach.
Yeah, I was a big fan of Adam Gase in the offseason. I hated the hire. Initially hated the hire. And remember, I told you this is just how Jet fans are. And I read you my a week worth of tweets of me going from hating it and jumping off the bridge to I love it, to he's winning me over, to you read all these reports about how amazing they look. The guys are re-energized. And then I'm not even going to look, I know things change and I'm not going to hold the injuries against them, but I'm not going to give him credit either. I'm not going to say, hey, I know your hands are tied, simply because we saw him abandon Ty Montgomery in week one. Like, a guy becomes that kind of a weapon in the preseason, and the first chance you get, you abandon him. He played 4 snaps in the first week, and I think he had 6 touches in week two, 6 total touches. In the first 2 weeks of the season, are you kidding me? 8, 9 touches? But listen, I gave the coach a D. I thought the offense was putrid. I don't care if they're on their third string quarterback. I think he showed no imagination, no creativity. He looks like he's been figured out, and he still doesn't know how to figure out the rest of the league. Like you mentioned, I do feel bad for Greg Williams, because I think he's hamstrung by some things. Like I said, a bad secondary, his defensive captain and C.J. Mosley is out. We could talk about just C.J., but remember something. Both of their middle linebackers are out because they lost Avery Williamson in a boneheaded move by Gase in the preseason, playing him with second and third stringers. So it's kind of hard there. Remember, Copeland, his outside linebacker, is suspended for PED use. There's a lot of things that is going against this defense right now. Quentin Williams, his ankle, he's been out for the last 2 games. And not for nothing, the reason I'm going to say Greg Williams is doing a hell of a job is because it was 20-0 with 13 minutes left in the second quarter. The Patriots only got 10 more points the rest of the game.
Yeah, he adjusted what was going on. I give the coaching staff an F, and I would have gave him another H for horrible, but like you said, because Greg Williams has done an excellent job, I thought he did a good job in a game against Cleveland. I thought he did a good job in a game against Buffalo. And to me, the problem is not the Jets' defense at all.
No.
It's not their defense.
Like you said, this defense has scored 16. This defense has 2 pick sixes and a safety early on in the season. It's hard for me to fault them. And if you take out the one Odell Beckham play last week where they were confused and in a zone, they were pretty damn good. I mean, you take away 89-yarder for Odell Beckham, and he had like something like 70 yards. And if you take it away, Baker Mayfield had something like 210 yards for the game. I thought the defense played well, considering the fact that the offense kept the defense out there. That's the other thing no one's taking into account, all the minutes that this defense is on the field.
No, you're absolutely right.
But, enough. They're dead and buried. Let's move on to Daniel Jones, king of New York.
Before we go to Daniel Jones, Matt, Mike, excuse me, listeners, let's just talk about Antonio Brown. All right, last week's show, we talked about Antonio Brown and the buffoonery and the circus act that's going on around him. And, you know, I was saying that I think, you know, this karma that's happening for, you know, that's going on with him right now. And he signed with the New England Patriots. And then the New England Patriots released him after another accuser came out against him.
See, that's the thing. And that's what I think he misunderstood. He has one accuser, one lawsuit. The other person came out. She said, I'm not interested in money. I'm not looking to file a suit. All she wanted to do was give insight into what she did. Her interactions with him were like, just to kind of give some sense. Because remember something, and I'm one of the guys that do this too. Remember I say that in the days of Me Too, we're too quick to jump on the men, and we need to start proceeding with a little more caution, because not all these stories have life to it. Some of these are baseless accusations, right? She came out just to give an idea of how he acts and how this can be real. You know, she was just kind of, remember, she didn't say she was raped. She didn't say any of those things. Just said he came out with the towel over and then, you know, gave her a hard time on paying the money.
And then he put up pictures of her kids. You know, he called them effing ugly.
And that's what I don't understand. That's why I'm confused.
Gotta be smart. You know, you listen. He's in a predicament to begin with. Be smart. Don't just do something dumber than what you've already done thus far. It makes no sense to me, Mad Mike.
And then Antonio Brown, that's what I don't get.
Yeah, he says he won't play in the NFL anymore. He took shots at owner Robert Kraft. He took shots at Ben Roethlisberger. In a series of tweets, this guy just doesn't quit. He doesn't quit. And it appeared to be referencing the $29 million in guaranteed money from the Oakland Raiders and a $9 million in signing bonuses from the Patriots. And the Raiders' guaranteed money was voided after the team found them detrimental to contact before his release.
That's the thing with him. We gotta be honest, right? I'm not even gonna go into the Patriots part of that, because if me and you were being honest with ourselves, he deserves what happened with the Patriots, because the Raiders didn't want to cut him. John Gruden, you know, put his reputation, I'm going to say, kind of on the line. It's been hurt the last couple of years. But listen, he was willing to deal with Antonio Brown even after calling Mike Mayock a cracker and threatening to punch him in the face. He was willing to move on from that for the sake of winning and mending fences. And remember, Antonio Brown said, I'm more than a player, coach. I'm more than a player. You're just treating me like a player. Released the conversation, everything. It was just like, you deserve to lose that money. I don't feel bad for you. When you want to talk about the money, you deserve to lose that money. Yeah, every penny of it.
And the Patriots are planning on withholding a signing bonus based on a representation, you know, warranty clause that calls for a player to disclose any situations that might prevent it continued availability.
Well, see, now here's the thing. And this is something that I actually heard early Sunday. And to my understanding, he actually is filing a $10 million grievance against them. He might have a shot at winning that $10 million from them. And here's why. While I think he's a piece of SHIT, and I think he deserves to lose all of his money, remember that lawsuit wasn't filed until after his deal with the Patriots was signed. He can plausible deniability, right? He can come out and form at least a decent argument to say, I didn't know she was going to sue. I didn't know any of this was going to come down the pipe. I didn't know SI was doing a piece on me. I didn't know they were interviewing all these people. So what do you mean that I should have made the Patriots aware that I misrepresented my contract and whatever else it is? I didn't do anything wrong. You got Patrick Chung, and I'm telling you, watch. Don't think he's not paying attention. You got Patrick Chung, who's being brought up on drug charges. drug distribution charges. He was playing against the Jets. And if you're Antonio Brown, you're going to say, why are you not voiding his contract and his guarantees? Is he not? Did you guys know about this? For the rest of the world know about it? Because nobody know about it.
Yeah, listen, Brown is being sued by former trainer Brittany Taylor over multiple allegations of sexual assault. He's also being accused of sexual misconduct by artists in a story published by Sports Illustrated last week. And had Brown not sent intimidating group text messages to the artists who accused him of unwanted sexual advances, the star wide receiver would still be playing in the Patriots. He would have probably been playing.
I agree with you there. Yes. 100%.
You know, I don't know, man. And Brown, he called on the NFL Players Association to hold teams accountable and get him the money he apparently is still seeking.
Well, but that's what I'm telling you. And that's going to be his argument. The clause that they're using to void my guarantees is a bogus clause in this case. I didn't know I was going to be sued before I signed that contract. And remember something. He got sued after the contract was signed and announced. Remember, that's the thing here. And you watch. That's why I'm kind of intrigued to see how this goes. Because remember that we all said, remember last week we were saying, man, this is going to be, or 2 weeks ago, this is going to be, collusion charges. They were tampering. How the hell did you get a deal of that magnitude done within hours? They knew that you had other teams that said that Drew Rosenhaus had already informed them when they called him Saturday morning that a deal with the Patriots was already done. So he'll burn them. I'm telling you right now, he'll burn them. He'll be like, yo, they were talking to me 3 weeks before I got outed, before I got released. Listen, they were coaching me through this.
After Brown's tyrant, there's nowhere in the world I think that Robert Kraft is even going to write a check. And since he's deleted tweets, man, Mike Brown has called out Kraft, former Steelers teammate Ben Roethlisberger. Brown referenced the Kraft's ongoing case in Florida, in which he was charged with solicitation for allegedly receiving a sexual act at a massage parlor. And Roethlisberger, 4-game suspension in 2010 for violating an NFL personal conduct policy based on a sexual assault accusation.
Yeah, but here's the thing. He didn't get this. That's what he's mistaken here. Ben Roethlisberger got suspended for what happened. Antonio Brown never got suspended. He could, if none of this is true, and his actions were just, he wouldn't get suspended. He was cut for his actions. His actions of what you just finished saying. You posted pictures of this woman's children. You tagged people in it. You called for investigations into her business. You called her kids ugly, for God's sake. You brought this on yourself. Listen, think about something. He didn't even get cut for the rapes. That's what's lost in all of this. They didn't cut him because of what's going on in the rape allegations. They cut him for his actions this week against the girl who did the SI interview. The painter. That's why he got cut.
You're absolutely right. And no one's
even talking about it.
I wouldn't expect him or any team to sign him until this whole thing is resolved, obviously.
And no.
The NFL released a statement Friday night that said Brown would not be placed on the commissioner's exonerated list while he's still a free agent. But they want him to be signed by a club that such placement may become appropriate at any time depending on the status of the investigation.
And that's the thing, Lloyd. And think about that. He's not on the commissioner's exempt list. He's not. He can come out and play tomorrow. I don't even know if he's playing Monday Night Football, but he can come out tonight. He can sign right now when this show finishes and come play tonight for either one of those teams. Realistically, that can happen. The New Orleans Saints, who need all the weapons they can get outside of, next to Michael Thomas with Drew Brees down, they can sign him tomorrow and just deal with it. That's what's blowing my mind right now. Think about this. Regardless of what you think about John Gruden, right? Mike Tomlin, Super Bowl winning coach, right? John Gruden, Super Bowl winning coach. Bill Belichick, Super Bowl winning coach. If Super Bowl winning coaches can't rein this guy in, what the hell makes us think that any other coach can get the job done?
Yeah, he's a, you know, true sense of the meaning of the word diva.
He's not a diva. Yeah, Odell Beckham's a diva. He's not a diva. He's something entirely different. Look, and you know how much I can't stand Odell Beckham. Odell Beckham's never done this. He's never done this. We could say whatever we want about that Josina Anderson interview. That was nothing like the things that Antonio Brown has done this year, just in the last 6 weeks. Nothing. Nothing like it.
Well, we'll see what happens. Listeners, we'll keep you posted on this and what's going on. But we're going to take a quick commercial break. And when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about the New York Giants. And we're going to talk about the New York Yankees as they prepare themselves for a playoff push. And we're going to talk about the New York Mets. Do they still have a chance to earn a wild card spot? So we'll be right back with more of the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Welcome back to the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Listeners, before the break, we talked about the New York Jets and we talked about the continual Antonio Brown saga. But now let's talk about the New York Giants as rookie quarterback Daniel Jones got his first start in the NFL. And Jones may be considered a hero as he had an incredible comeback win for the New York Giants. And Daniel Jones channeled his inner Eli Manning, man, Mike, to lead a game-winning 75-yard drive Sunday against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The Giants won their first game of the season by a score of 32-31. And Jones, in his first career start over Eli Manning, was 23-36 with 336 yards. He scored two rushing touchdowns, threw for two passing touchdowns, and went under 22 minutes left. Under 2 minutes left in the game, he sealed the win. And Jones, listen, the Giants defense is woeful, man, Mike. Woeful.
One of the worst defenses I've seen.
Woeful. Tampa Bay drove right up the field, and the kicker missed a 34-yard field goal, which I'm pretty sure he might get cut after that. He missed two extra points in a 34-yard field goal to win the game. And Janoris Jenkins just got torched the entire game. And you was talking about you wanted Janoris Jenkins, you can have him.
You know what, Janoris Jenkins, though, it's funny. You can't come out and talk the amount of crap you did about your own teammates and the coverage woes and everything else and then put up a game like that. Like, you got seriously embarrassed. And I'll be honest with you, man, it's like, I thought Daniel Jones looked good. I thought he looked good. I thought he looked poised. He was able to read the field. But I honestly, man, I think in that second half, Todd Bowles, and I told you this, you know, off the air. Todd Bowles is a brutal second half coach. Go look at his defenses historically. He is brutal in the second half of games. He doesn't make adjustments. I just don't think that he knows how to adjust. I think that he has a game plan and he's going to stick to it. If it's not working, they're going to get blown out. And that's just him. You know, you saw in that last drive, they were just talking about it. You know how many times I've seen that happen before? Miscommunication in the back end of his defenses, broken coverages. On that final play, Daniel Jones, bravo, my man, because that's something Eli Manning, we would have never seen him do it. Daniel Jones saw that they basically drop eight into coverage and no spy, nobody in the middle of the field. And he didn't even look. You saw it. He didn't even look. He just tucked the ball and ran straight up the what was it, 13 yards? Yeah. Scamper was like 9 yards, straight for the touchdown. Bravo, Daniel Jones.
I tell you, you never see Eli Manning do that.
That's what I'm saying. It really was amazing. But I'll tell you, in all the nonsense that the Jets' season has been, I'll tell you one thing, one person I don't miss is Todd Bowles. And Bruce Arians, I'm going to tell you this, Lloyd, and because it's on par with Daniel Jones, you saw on the other side, like you've been seeing the last you know, couple years, you see what happens when you don't trust your quarterback anymore, because they went into a shell. He threw an interception, and they were like, you know what? You're not throwing the ball no more. You're not passing. As bad as this defense and this secondary is, we're just going to run the ball. They basically gave away the game, and that's going to be the difference now. We're going to see how much, how quickly Pat Shurmur is going to feed him, how much he's going to put on the plate, and we're going to see a lot about Pat Shurmur now, too. It was a good opening start for them. It really was, and they did it without Saquon Barkley.
Yeah, and talking about Saquon Barkley obviously was ruled out of the Giants game yesterday in Tampa Bay with an ankle injury after limping off the field in the second quarter. And obviously he's a Giants superstar, and he was later seen in that game using crutches with a boot on his right foot. All right, and details of the injuries, they haven't been announced just yet, but Barkley, they're saying he has a high ankle sprain and is scheduled to undergo an MRI today, man, Mike. And he had 8 carries for 10 yards and 4 catches for 27 before he was departed. Now, here's the thing, man, Mike. This is what I don't get. Okay? In most sport, any type of sporting event, okay, and I consider football to be a game of chess, just like I consider boxing and other things as well. Okay, the strength of Tampa Bay's defense, right, Mad Mike, you follow me?
Mm-hmm.
It's up the middle. You have Ndamukong Suh and company. Why in the hell did the Giants continue to run the ball in between the tackles? They ran one toss with Saquon Barkley while he was on the field. You need to give him the opportunity to get open in space because he's such a great cutback runner. Get him open. They kept on running the ball in between the tackles. I don't get it.
But that's why I tend to throw cold water, because you still have these questions. You see how you're asking these questions? These are legit questions about your coach. A quarterback is not going to change that. It was still the wrong game plan. They won, but it was still the wrong game plan. It's as simple as that. I mean, be honest, it's just a matter of a lazy defensive coordinator, lazy defensive players, and you saw it coming. That 75-yard touchdown to start, it was the first play of the second half, that 75-yard touchdown to Evan Engram. Evan Engram disappeared in the game. If you take away that one catch, what did he do? Nothing. Between that and the last drive was 95% of his yards. That's just facts. Go look at it. For some reason, they came out and they just weren't ready. He didn't even have a safety on him. Safety coming in, took a bad angle, misses the tackle, and then the cornerback's on the edge all by himself. Half-hearted. Yo, it's crazy to me. It's like 28-10, we got this. I think, Pat, and I know, you know what, like I said, I'm giving Daniel Jones all the credit in the world, but the one guy that I will not give credit to is Pat Shurmur. Because like you said, I think he had a bad game plan. I just think that Todd Bowles is a worse coach than Pat Shurmur. I think Pat Shurmur's a bad coach. Todd Bowles is worse.
That's a great point, man, Mike. And listen, we've criticized Pat Shurmur on his play calling and his coaching ability to, you know, not only last year, but this year as well.
But that's my point. What did you see from Pat Shurmur that tells you that anything is going to change as far as he goes? Let's be honest about it. Like I said, on that final drive, Sterling Shepard was uncovered. How does Sterling Shepard, who's the best wide receiver on the roster at the moment, not have anybody on him? Think about that. This is the wide receiver one. When's the last time you saw a wide receiver one not be covered on a football field? That's defensive coaching. That's Todd Bowles. The touchdown run, you saw it. He there was no spy. There was no middle linebacker.
There was
like, what are you doing?
There. Nothing.
Is that because Pat Shurmur called a great play? No.
Yeah.
That's because Daniel Jones correctly and quickly diagnosed the play. Kudos to him. We don't even know what the play was called. We just know that he scrapped the play as soon as he saw it and did the right thing. I saw enough. Let me tell you something. You say whatever you want. They don't. That kicker doesn't miss. And it's funny because you blame the you spoke about the defense, right? Who James Betcher is a disciple of Todd Bowles. You feel comfortable? You see where I'm going with that?
Yeah.
As bad as Todd Bowles was on that final drive, was Betcher not just as bad?
Yeah, he was.
Did they not drive all the way down?
They both were awful. What was it, a total of 63-point score?
Yeah. And you know what? Shame on Tampa Bay, because they got down there to the goal line, and instead of trying to run one more play, seeing if maybe they can catch the Giants off guard, they decided, because they don't trust their quarterback, they decided to play for the field goal, and bad things happen when you play for field goals.
Yeah, I thought they could have ran another play as well.
Yeah.
Maybe a quick something like that.
They clocked the ball. They clocked the ball, right? There was 13 seconds left, 11 seconds left. You run one play. See what happens. Maybe the Giants have a breakdown in communication and a breakdown in coverage. And you know, remember something. They were down to, what, the fifth linebacker?
And you like, had Mike Evans, who was just destroying Janoris Jenkins. So you could have took a shot in the end zone also.
But they don't trust Jameis Winston in the biggest moments. And they proved that yet again. And this is what happened. So, like I said, I don't see anything to be outside of Daniel Jones' play. I don't take anything out of that game. Feel good for the kid, but don't feel good for anybody else.
And speaking on that, let's start off with our report cards for the New York Giants. And obviously, like you said, me and Mad Mike give kudos to Daniel Jones for his performance. But outside of that, the play calling again was very linear. They didn't adapt anything. They kept on doing, you know, they kept with the same system. If it wasn't for Todd Bowles' bad play call on the opposite side of the field, the Giants would have gotten annihilated again. So strictly because of Jones and Daniel Jones, I'm going to give the offense a B, Mad Mike.
Yeah, I gave him a B, too. I loved how Daniel Jones kept his composure during that sack barrage from, you know, Shaq Barrett. Even when he had the fumble in the midst of that little mid third quarter, fourth quarter, where they had four straight series of no first downs. No one's talking about that. He stuck with it, man. He lost his best playmaker on offense in Saquon Barkley, his security blanket, and somehow he pulled out a victory. I gave him a B. I give him an A+. But I give them a B, like you mentioned. We already mentioned
and
about that.
I also want to give kudos to Matt Mike, because despite the pocket collapsing, he stood tall in the pocket.
Yeah.
The only thing that makes me nervous about him, Matt Mike, is he turns the ball over a little bit. It's his ball security. That makes me a little bit nervous about him. But I like the fact that he stands tall in the pocket. And what I mean by stand tall, listeners, why he stands tall in the pocket is that when the pocket starts to surround him and get close to him, he never won. He stays right in the pocket and continues to look down the field. He doesn't let that bother him. And, nope. And a lot of those plays, man, Mike, you and I both know that if the shoe was on the other foot and it was Eli Manning in that pocket, he would have fell to the floor or something would have happened, but you wouldn't have got that.
No, exactly, and I think that like I was saying, I think that they really, really, really. Yesterday's game, I think, exposed Eli Manning for what he is, and I think that, to me personally, I think it hurts his legacy. I really do, because you have a lot of people that have been saying for a long time, he's holding this team back, and I think you saw it. And one more thing about the benching, because we didn't even get to discuss the benching. I don't think that they were necessarily ready to go to Daniel Jones, regardless of what they tell you. I think it's solely based on the fact that if they want Eli to go into the Hall of Fame, and especially as a Giant, I don't think that he's now 116-116. I don't think they wanted to take any chance that Eli Manning is going to go in as an under 500 quarterback. There's just something about that that's negative, and I think they were trying to save. I think they were just looking post career.
I was telling somebody the other day, I don't think he's played poorly.
No, not at all. But like I said, I just think that's my personal take on that. I just think that there's enough people out there that don't think he's a Hall of Famer, that don't think he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, that think that, you know, some lucky throws got him championships, and he won on the backs of defenses and, you know, that stuff. If he goes under 500, we're talking about a guy that has led the league in interceptions multiple times. We're talking about a guy that's had more seasons of double-digit interceptions than he has single-digit interceptions. I think the one thing that's left for them to protect was his record. And once he got to 500, I think you do have to pull the plug, which they did.
Great point. All right, now let's move on to the defense. And if it wasn't for the defense being able to put pressure on Jameis Winston and sack him a couple times, Matt Mike, I would have gave him an H for horrible. But because they did get to the quarterback and sack him a few times, I'm going to give him a D. D minus, as a matter of fact. Because Janoris Jenkins got torched. They can't cover nobody. Jabril Peppers couldn't cover no tight ends. They got beat deep. I don't know where the safety help was. I don't know where Antoine Bethea was. And you called out Antoine Bethea for being overrated. I was expecting a little bit more from Jabril Peppers than I've gotten thus far, man, Mike. He was an excellent cornerback in college at the University of Michigan. And he can't cover tight ends in the NFL.
Well, you got to remember something. In Michigan, he played special teams. He played a little running back, played a little linebacker, and he played safety. So he was just one of those guys that had, you know, he was just the best athlete on the field at all times. But I always thought, in my personal opinion, it was kind of like he was in that Miles Jack role. Same exact role as Miles Jack. But I think that it always hurt him because I don't think he spent enough time perfecting his position. And I think that has kind of hurt him in the NFL because of that. Because now he's an immensely talented guy. But you know more than anything, everybody in the NFL is immensely talented. Everybody in the NFL is uber athletic. Everybody in the NFL belongs. So what separates the great ones from the good ones, from the average ones, is perfecting your craft, you know, attention to detail. And I think that it's done him a huge disservice. You know, his college days have done him a huge disservice. And, you know, we'll see. But I gave them an F. I just think that I thought that Bruce Arians losing confidence in his quarterback, you know, kind of bailed them out a little bit. They couldn't stop the run. Mike Evans, you tell me. I don't know if they did anything special to take him away. You saw them in the second half. There was a few replays where they're like, Jameis Winston just missed him. Jameis Winston just didn't see him. He was always open. To me, I thought he could have had 250, 300 yards instead of 190 and change. My opinion of it, I thought this defense was horrible. And I don't think this defense is going to get better. I don't think they have a good defensive coordinator. Like I've been saying, this guy is a disciple of Todd Bowles. It's not like Todd, you know, Todd Bowles gets a lot of credit. And I don't see, if you ever go look outside of 1 or 2 years in Arizona, what has Todd Bowles done in his career that people think he's this elite defensive guy?
Yeah, no,
you know, we're not talking about Bill Belichick. You know, I got to run and get the protege of Todd Bowles. What were the Giants thinking?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, now, moving on to special teams, you know, I don't think the special teams did anything great, and I don't think they did anything poorly. You know, I guess with that being said, I give them a C plus.
I give them a B because I thought, you know, one, no missed kicks in a game where you win by 1 point, like you mentioned. The Tampa Bay kicker, 2 missed extra points and a missed field goal. So personally for me, I'm gonna give them credit there. And I thought their coverage teams played awesome. I really do think their coverage team played awesome. Tampa Bay either has a really bad return man or the Giants really, 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 really set it up well. So you pick.
Okay. All right, now coaching. All right, I'm giving the coaching an F. Again, play calling was not that great. Daniel Jones had a great game, but it wasn't because of great play calling. I mean, the Giants did run some plays that were actually, you know, there was some spots, a few spots, man, Mike, where I was like, that was a good call. I'm not going to lie about that. But overall, Like you said, maybe it had much to do with him going up against Tar Bowles. We'll see what happens in the Giants' next game. We'll see what happens. The defense was atrocious again. Betcher was calling blitzes, and they were getting beat with screens. They were getting beat with no one covering the middle of the field, and they was throwing the ball deep. Jameis Winston had a couple bad throws. And if those throws was on target, it would have been a lot worse for the Giants. The Giants would have lost. They should have lost this game. They should have lost this game.
I'll be honest. I gave them a C. And as you're saying this, if they don't win this game, my grade is probably more of a D minus F. Simply put, they won the game. Daniel Jones is getting them a bump up because because of the win in the second half, 22 points. Can't question can't question the halftime adjustments. It's up for debate if they actually made adjustments, but yeah, you know what I mean? I just can't question it. So I gave them a C, and we'll see what happens next week.
I'll give them a D plus only because they put up 30-something points. So that's why they got that grade, listeners. That's why. But now, let's move on to baseball, Matt Mike. And let's start off with the New York Mets. And the New York Mets won yesterday 6-3 to take the series from the Cincinnati Reds and set up an interesting final week for them, Matt Mike. And they had to come to grips with letting one get away from them on Saturday, hoping it wouldn't doom their season. But they came back on Sunday and won that game 6-3. They still are 4.5 games back with 7-plus games to play on the season. And they now have games against the Miami Marlins, 4 against the Marlins, 3 against the Atlanta Braves. They can't afford to split. They really need to win out, Mad Mike. They need to. Because even though they're trailing by 4.5 games, it's tough for listeners when you have to leapfrog other teams in front of you, and Philly is not that far behind the Mets to begin with. Philly is not that far behind, and neither is Arizona. And maybe it's a good thing that they got to face the Miami Marlins, but the Miami Marlins, didn't they beat the Nationals yesterday?
Yeah, you're talking spoiler. They're playing a role of spoiler. Let's be honest. I'm sure Derek Jeter will want nothing more than to ruin the Mets season. But I don't know what they have left. It's amazing to me. The thing about it for me with them is every single time they've come close, every time they've gotten hot, something like Saturday's game happens where there's a golden opportunity and they lay an egg and lose 3-0. You know what I mean? We just can't have that anymore. And this is why I kind of just don't, you know what I mean? I'm not a believer in them, but the fact that they've made it to the final week of the season, I think they should be applauded. And, go from there. I mean, we'll see what they build on. Stroman has pitched better, it's another day where he doesn't complete 5. It's just been that kind of thing for him. You know what I mean? So it's just we'll see what happens with them. Hopefully, I'm not gonna say hopefully they pull it out, but
look, they got to win out, and they also have to hope that everybody loses. And based on the numbers, Matt Mike, realistically, the Mets are unlikely to reach the postseason, even if everything went well. But there's definitely one thing I can guarantee. They have no room for error. None whatsoever. No room for error this team has. They can't split with Miami. They need to sweep Miami. They need to sweep the Marlins. And then they need to take 2 out of 3 from the Atlanta Braves. So you're talking about the Mets need to win 6 of their next 7 games. Because Milwaukee has a, they have an easy, I think Milwaukee plays Pittsburgh and Cincinnati the final stretch. Washington yes. has a tough, I think Washington has a tougher schedule of those teams, man, Mike. I think they have to play Cleveland, and I forgot who the other team is they have to play.
Washington in the final week?
Yeah.
They have, I believe they have Philly and Cleveland to close the year.
That's tough. That's tough.
So that I mean, but it's tough. But at the same time, if all they need is three wins to force at least a play-in with any of these teams, that's the thing about it. They all the teams that are both teams in front of the Mets, the Milwaukee Brewers, and the Nationals. All they have to do is win three games this week, man. They can go 3-4, and I'm not gonna say obviously the Mets can go hot, but what number to you guarantees at least a play-in? With the Mets currently have 81 wins, 88. You got to get to about 88. So that means the Mets would have to get what? Six, seven wins this week, and those teams have to get something like 3 or 4 wins. Last three or two.
That's tough. That's why I say it's tough when you got to leapfrog over other teams.
At one point, you know what I mean? So
the Mets did control their own destiny, and they threw that out the window.
And that's you're right. And that's where I go with it. It's a numbers game, man. It's just like those teams can stub their toes. And the Mets can't stub their toes this week. That's the thing. The Mets are in a must win situation where those other teams are must win, but not necessarily. You know what I mean?
Like you said, believe the Miami Marlins are coming in not to allow that to happen. They come in and win some damn baseball games.
The Mets have 7 games, right?
Yeah, they got 4 against the Marlins and 3 against the Braves.
So yeah, so as a matter of fact, my math was right. Think about this. If the Mets win out, the Mets will go to 88 wins, right? The Nationals have 85, and I think the Brewers have 86 wins, if I'm not mistaken, right? So the Brewers just need 2 wins to guarantee at least a play-in game, and the Nationals need 3 wins to guarantee a play-in game, at least. If either one of those teams if the Brewers get 3 wins, they clinch. Think about that. And if the Nats go 4-3, which we can argue with their pitching staff should be doable, 4-3, even against the talent that they're playing, the Mets are out.
Yeah, you're right. I even think, you know, I mean, I knew it was going to be tough, but once you break it down like that, yeah, that's tough. That's tough.
Yeah, and remember something else. With every Met loss this week, it's one less win those teams need.
Yeah. Yep, the magic number dwindles down to the elimination.
So yeah,
if the Mets lose, that counts as an elimination number. And if another team win, that counts as an elimination number for the New York Mets.
Yeah, that's 2 games in 1 day. And let's be honest, even playing the Marlins, the Pittsburgh Pirates are just as bad as the Marlins. So let's just bank. Milwaukee's in. Let's just say Milwaukee's making the playoffs. So the question is, can the Mets get hot this week and knock out the Washington Nationals with Patrick Corbin and Steven Strasburg and Max Scherzer? And 2 of those guys are going to get 2 starts this week. 2 of those guys. So you're let's just say you're in the final 7 games. Those 3 should make 5 starts.
Yeah, 4 starts. Yeah, no, you're right.
Dependent, right? Because four starts. Because those 3, so your 4 and 5 starters are going to get 2 games, and those guys should get 5 games, assuming that they're lined up for this week.
Woo! Well, we'll see what happens, Mets fans. You better keep your shoelaces crossed on this one. Let's move on to the other New York team, man, Mike. Our beloved New York Yankees. as Luis Severino and the Yankees toyed with the Blue Jays on Sunday, winning their final game at Yankee Stadium during the regular season by a score 8-3. And a real test for Severino will come in the playoffs. But his first two outings, after missing nearly the entire season due to right rotator cuff inflammation, followed by a last strain, has given the Yankees more hope than he's pretty much, you know, that he's back. And he overmatched Toronto. He threw five innings, Matt Mike, on Sunday, allowing three singles and a hit batsman in his 80 pitch outing. He consistently reached the high 90s with his fastball, against the Blue Jays, and they didn't get a runner in the scoring position with Severino on the mound. Aaron Judge, man, he's played well down the stretch, and that's big for the Yankees come playoff time. He is 26th home of the season in the bottom of the first. And Brett Gardner added another 3-run shot into the second deck later in that inning to make it 4-0. And D. Daly Mayhew, man, what can you say about D. Daly Mayhew, man, Mike?
Great. We hated the signing. Yeah, that's
we
what
did. We did, but you know what? So listen, that's what you know. That's what reporting sports are talking about. Sports is all about, right? You're not going to be right all of the time, but when you're wrong, you got to admit that you're wrong. And this is a good signing. He's come in. He's done his job, man, Mike. He's been a great team player. He's been good in the clubhouse. Really haven't heard any negative thing about him at all during the season. Low key. Big. Now, here's a question, man, Mike, before we talk about Domingo Germán. The question I want to ask you, and this is what I've been talking about with a few people, okay? If the season was to end today, it doesn't look like the Yankees are going to win. Get the best record in American League. So it looks like they're going to face the Minnesota Twins. For whatever reason, Mad Mike, that matchup makes me nervous. And I don't know if it's because Minnesota bops the hell out of the ball, just like the Yankees, and that's something that Minnesota didn't do any of the other times the Yankees beat up on them in the past when playing them in the playoffs. These guys hit home runs. They hit home runs just like the Yankees. So in the blink of an eye, they could be down and bam, they're right back in it. Minnesota makes me nervous. Shit, matter of fact, all the damn playoff teams make me nervous. Minnesota makes me nervous. Oakland makes me nervous. If Cleveland gets in, Cleveland makes me nervous. Houston makes me nervous.
I'm going to cut you off. I'm going to give you reason to feel better. First off, before I touch on that real quick, the couple things I'm looking for this week, I believe the Yankees have a 3-home run lead on the Minnesota Twins. I'm hoping that the Yankees, it's not just about getting, before it was about getting the 300 home runs for me. Now it's about, you know, staying ahead of the Twins. Because the one thing about it is, yeah, we broke last year's record and they broke last year's record. But whoever ends with more home runs this year, they're the record holder. And we may never see this number again. So I'm hoping the Yankees keep that number. It would be great to say, hey, Yankees had 308 home runs and that's the new record. Not the New York Yankees had 307 and the Twins had 308. Nobody remembers second place when it comes to records. That's one. Two. I believe if Boone gets 4 wins out of the last 7 games this week, I could be wrong, but he's at 202 wins. Amazing. I believe 205 wins in your first 2 years as a first time manager is the record. I'd love to see him get to 206 and break the record. That would be real cool, especially for a manager that nobody wanted in New York. I raised my hand and said I wasn't one of those guys. I fully supported his hire. But you know what I'm saying? I just think it would be cool. Like, you know, everyone has to, you know, kind of go from he wasn't the guy, they made a mistake, to now, wow, not only does he look like he was the right guy, but he's about to set the record for most wins. And think about, it's not like we're talking about a guy who's flush with talent and all this money. Last year, he's managing a team that's kind of was weeding out. Remember last year, they didn't spend no money. We were like, oh, we thought they were going to go into this offseason and spend the money. And then they went into this offseason and they didn't spend no money. And then with all the injuries, we're talking about a guy that's kind of actually not managed a Death Star. He's actually managed a little engine that could into a Death Star. And I think that's pretty cool. Now, the reason I was going to tell you, I don't think that you need to be as worried about those teams anymore, is because if we just look at previous history, I'm going to operate as if we're going to get playoff Tanaka. You know, like we're going to get the Bulldog, who's not going to go in there, pitch timid, play with pitches like he does in the regular season. He's not going to save bullets. We're going to get the guy that's going to have that sinker and that splitter popping, and we're going to get playoff Tanaka, something that he's been pretty damn good at, right? James Paxton has shaved almost a full run off of his ERA since mid-August. Almost a full run. Think about that for a second. Talking about a guy that has gone from almost a 5 ERA to sub 4 now. He's like 3.79, I think, after his last start. Think about that for a second. So over the last 6 to 7 weeks, he's actually pitching with a sub 3 ERA. So he's looking like a number 1-2 starter. Severino, 5 hits and 9 innings of shutout ball in the past week. Let's see what he has this week. There's no blip on the radar, and he looks just as dominant and increasing it, maybe getting to 6-inning start in his next go-round. You're talking about you have a legit 1-2-3. Legit 1-2-3. And then, you know, you go with an opener, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're talking about Chad Green. You don't got to worry about it because you get CeCe Sabathia. We'll be replacing a guy like Vidal Nuno I don't even remember what the guy's name, the fat lefty. Yeah, the fat lefty. Yeah, you'll get CeCe. Yeah, you know what I mean? Or you'll get CeCe replacing him. You'll get, like, all these other guys will become bullpen arms, like your starters and you know. So that's what other teams have been doing to the Yankees. That's how the Red Sox won last year.
Yeah, here's the thing, Mad Mike. Do you think that the whole thing with Domingo Germán is going to hurt? Because he's been placed on administrative leave under his domestic violence policy as he got into an argument with his girlfriend and was seen smacking her during the dispute. And within hours, staff members were removing issues of Yankee Magazine that had Germán on the cover from the stands. And Germán, who pitched in the night before, was barred from the stadium from speaking with the team and officials during the leave. And obviously, he was an important part to the Yankees' success this year. And the Yankees are preparing as if he's not even going to be with them during the postseason. And who knows, you know, how his future is going to pan out, not only with the Yankees, but with Major League Baseball. As you know, the Yankees are not a team that tolerates things of this nature.
I think they'll be fine. Domingo Germán he's got a 4 ERA. He's 18-4. 4 ERA is fairly solid, but we're not talking about a guy that's been actually, you know, lighting it up going into his last few starts. I believe since mid-August, he's given up something like 15 or 16 runs and something like 20 or 30 innings. So, like, basically a run every other inning. He's been averaging. So he's a guy that, remember, that is blown his innings limit. I don't think he's a guy that was part of the future plans anyway. I think he was a guy that this hurts the Yankees more because with a cloudy future, you just don't know what if you'll be able to trade him anymore. I think that he was going to be a huge trade chip with some of these other guys. The one good thing about, you know, that's going overlooked is they've had such a good year with so many of their minor leaguers this year that I think that they have a lot more trade chips than they normally would. Tyler Wade, he's played really well the last 4 weeks. He's become a trade chip. Mike Ford, there's no home for Mike Ford here. Greg Bird, the forgotten man. Andujar, Miguel Andujar. We don't know. Miguel Andujar, I mean, what has Gio Urshela done to lose this job? Played gold glove caliber third base. Remember something, they were one of the worst infield defensively last year, and this year they're one of the best. That didn't happen by mistake. And we can say, oh, well, it was the signing of DJ LeMahieu. Yeah, part of it. The other part is it was the signing of Gio Urshela. It was getting Deeney back and being able to move LeMahieu from second to third and Torres from second to short and interchangeable parts. It's worked out. Miguel Andujar kills that. He just does. So I think that's where the Yankees are going to be hurt, because what if me and you are having this conversation? I'm like, all right, well, they can sign Garrett Cole. Steven Strasburg is going to opt out. They can sign him. They can make a play for these guys, Madison Bumgarner. If you only want to sign one, now all of a sudden you can go and move Herman, Andujar, and another guy, let's say Mike Ford and Tyler Wade. You get yourself a pretty damn good pitcher for that package. So that's where it hurts. But I don't think he was going to be a big, maybe a bullpen guy, but I don't think he was going to be a big key starter in a playoff run.
Yeah, congratulations to the Yankees for winning the AL East. It's exciting to have playoff baseball back in New York again, Mad Mike. Excuse me, for another year. And it's something that we're going to cover and move forward. And me and Mad Mike are both excited about the Yankees, and we're really pulling for them to win their 28th World Championship. And also, hockey is back. So at some point, listeners, we're going to talk about that as well. But now it comes to the point of the show that we all know and love, where we let Mad Mike give his rant for the week. So, Mad Mike, what's your rant for this week? What's going on? What are you upset about, brother?
Well, my rant kind of just lost steam with the last segment, but it's Domingo Herman. How selfish and how dumb can you be? One, what are you doing putting hands on a female? Two, what are you doing putting hands on a female in front of the commissioner's office? You know what I mean? Like, what are you doing it in public? Three, what argument could you be having that's so serious enough to put your hands on your lady in September in a pennant race in the middle of your career year? We just finished talking about you're 18-4. You're having the best season of your career. How irresponsible could you be? How selfish could you be? How dumb could you be? Everything that's going to come now, he deserves it. He can stay on administrative leave, which is essentially him being fired. His if you ask me, all these other 30-game suspensions, you can suspend him for a quarter of the year next year, which is actually 40 games. So suspend for half the year.
Yeah, Chapman when that happened? How many games did he get?
It was 30-some games. Yeah. But remember, the difference with him was nobody saw him doing it. It was a he said, she said situation where they just deemed that there was enough credible evidence to at least suspend him for 30. People saw this. There's no denying it happened. It's one of the reasons the Yankees kind of cut ties with him this week, because there is no, you can't tolerate it. So anyway, he's a jackass for doing it. And if his career is over, he never rebounds from this, ladies, I'm supporting y'all on this one. He doesn't deserve his career. He deserves everything that comes from here on out.
There you have it, listeners. And with that being said, that's going to bring us to a close of this week's show. Me and Mad Mike want to thank you again for sticking with us. And my apologies, listeners, for my voice. And if you heard any coughing in the background, I'm dealing with a head cold right now. But, you know, that doesn't stop me from doing a show. And we want to thank our producer, Ayo Omar Baker, for rocking out with us. So, listeners, please have a safe and blessed week. And me and the Mad Mike can see you in 7 days to hit you with some more of the real deal. So, hey, yo, let's roll, baby.
Absolutely, man. I've been getting over something myself. A little head cold. Been on some black seed oil. That helped to clear things up. A lot of nettle tea. I don't know if it's the season change or what, but I'm back on a good solid 2 feet. So I know you'll be back on your good 2 feet pretty soon. Shouts to everybody that's listening with two good ears to the Lloyd A. Thompson, the Mad Mike Sports Show. Everybody subscribe, much appreciated, as always. And if not, make sure you do subscribe. We are available everywhere, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. So make sure you subscribe, because brand new episodes drop every Monday. You don't want to miss that drop when it drops. If you want to chat on Twitter, it's at Lloyd A. Thompson. Same on Instagram, at Lloyd A. Thompson. Make sure you put two L's in that. And hit LloydAThompson.com or Lloyd@partofmyfresh.com if you want to send a question to be answered on a future episode of the show. Once again, brand new episodes of the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Show every Monday. Catch y'all 7 days. Peace.